Good evening, and welcome to Local Motion, where we go in-depth with local public affairs from around the KVNF listening area. I'm Jake Ryan. Today on the show, we'll be looking at some new ideas about new beginnings, leaving a job for a new career, starting with a fresh beginning, or just expanding out in new ways. Transitioning can be challenging. There's not always a roadmap of how to make it in the world, but there are some people who can help. We'll hear today from three people who run three different projects that hope to help people and businesses grow, armed with a good supply of fresh ideas themselves. To begin, we'll talk with Chris Yates, who has created something on the Western Slope usually reserved for big cities, co-working space.
My name's Chris Yates. I'm the founder of The Hive Peonia. People ask me all the time what I do, and I don't know how to answer that anymore. So I guess the closest answer is that I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm a starter. That's what I do, is I see something that could be born, and I help it be born. And typically, I will hand that off to somebody else because I want to go start something else. The Hive is a real unique concept because originally when we got the building, it was just an empty office building sitting there, and we thought, well, Peonia needs more office space. And so we were going to build that, but then we were kind of looking at it going, that's boring. Really? Is that all it is? And I kept running into people around town that were saying, gosh, there's no place to meet. Like one person in particular is an attorney, and she's self-employed and works out of her home. But she said, I can't meet clients at the coffee shop because it's not confidential. I can't go to the library because that I'm commercial. And so I'm not supposed to use the public resources for private use like that. And she couldn't find anywhere that was good to meet clients. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Why doesn't somebody just have a meeting room in a private office building that could be rented by the hour or have some kind of a membership structure? And that's kind of how it began. And so I was traveling around to different cities and finding these co-working spaces all over the place in big cities. And so I went into them to figure out what their models were, and they varied a lot. And I was at one in Boulder, and that was the first one I had seen that it was staffed. It actually had people running it, and they were doing events and workshops and actually helping people collaborate and share resources, and they were hosting that. And I thought, this is really amazing. And I wonder if that could happen in a town as small as Peonia. And I couldn't find it anywhere in my research. And these are very popular spaces in big cities, but I couldn't find examples in small towns. And so what we found, though, is that the numbers actually justified the risk of having the experiment.
So Chris, could you tell me more about this idea of co-working?
Co-working is the official term, I suppose, but there's a lot that goes into that. You know? We use the word collaboration a lot, resource sharing, because the co-working movement is not just about office space. It's about the fact that we actually need each other. And the culture that we're coming out of, the working culture, was built on separation. Privacy, your own space, and that doesn't actually work anymore. Sometimes we need privacy to focus and get things done, but I get to see, every day at the Hive, amazing interactions take place because somebody needs something and they're trying to figure out how to get it done. And all the time there's somebody else in the room that overhears it and says, hey, I can do that for you. And so people, regardless of budget, are making these enormous leaps in their work, in their personal lives, and feeling fulfilled while at work, because what's difficult for one person is very easy for another. And it just becomes this community, almost like a family, that anybody's allowed to join. And it says, we're here to get stuff done, but let's help each other do it. And so it's a very different way to work, because instead of being competitive, everybody is a colleague and a comrade, and we're all, even if we're in separate businesses, organizations, we have a common goal. In fact, I bet the Hive is also unique in that about half of our suite holders are nonprofits, and the other half are for-profits, and they're all collaborating together, even though they have a very different tax status or a way of behaving on paper. And it's amazing to see all the resource sharing and the collaboration, because really the limits of one organization are not the limits of another. And so all of a sudden things are getting done in a rapid speed that never happened before. And so the Hive now does many things. It has 10 private office suites, but they're not just office suites. It includes all the utilities. It includes the internet. It includes organic coffee and tea and high-speed color printing and access to workshops and social gatherings and conferences and meeting room use and all these different things just to have a suite there. It also has private meeting rooms that have flat screen TVs that are internet ready, so you can do, in Paonia, global video conferencing in real time. We now have cell tower boosters. So if you can't get Verizon coverage in town, you can get it at the Hive. And so we're basically, the Hive is filling every technological gap that we can find. So when people come into the community, they're in the North Fork Valley touring for their work, their school, whatever their purpose, and they say, gee, this place is amazing. I would move here if, and then they have an objection. And so every time we hear an objection, we go, how can we fill that gap? Can we fix that?
The shared resources, there's of course a drop in the cost to do business, I guess. Sure. Do you have any idea how much of a difference that is?
Yeah. I mean, if you were going to go set up your own office with, basic equipment, you have to think, okay, I'm renting an office, I'm paying the utilities, I'm paying for the internet, I'm going to have a multifunction scanner, printer, copier thing with ink it needs. I'm probably buying coffee or tea. I might, if I don't have enough space for meetings, I might still have to go somewhere else to do that anyway. And then there's workshops, education, technology services. We now have Brody Kinder, who used to work for Apple, now is at the Hive, and he's our in-house tech support. What would you pay for tech support? That's all stuff you get for free, or included at least, as a Hive member. People ask me, well, how can the Hive afford all that? Because the population of the area shouldn't be large enough, or you wouldn't think that that many people would be interested in that kind of a space to provide all that. And here's the thing. About half of our membership base moved to the Valley here within the last 6 months. So basically, the newer people that came to visit because they heard about the amazing food, the wine, the nature, the clean air, the everything that we love about this place is what drew them here. People used to leave, though, because they were like, well, where am I going to work? Where am I going to do what I do? And there was no answer. And now there is, and they stay.
How important is your space for new businesses, startups, that type of thing?
Yeah. Most of the Hive members, we've got suite holders. Some of them are established nonprofits or small businesses. Most of them are brand new. They're startups that began in the last 2 years. Some of them are brand new out of the gate. So the Hive has become sort of the entrepreneurial mecca of sorts, where if you want to start something, you can come there and do it because your costs are minimal to begin. And, the Hive is run by its members. So we have a paid manager, Joanna, our queen bee. She runs everything. But we have a 10 slots where members can be hosts. We call them Hive hosts, and they run it. And there are 10 members who have a shift each week, a half a day shift to run the front. Those people, if you really were to look at their bios, their background, their history, they are highly sophisticated, highly experienced business people, attorneys, consultants, finance people, all sorts of backgrounds. And so, for entrepreneurs who want to move to the Valley here or start a new business, to come in that door, they're accessing this knowledge base that is second to none. It's really phenomenal. And so that's the whole point. And that is the point of the collaboration of the community that we're trying to create, that says, hey, we all live in this community together. If you have a business or a nonprofit or a single project or a big company, it doesn't matter. We want to work with you. And that's, that's the whole foundation of what we've built is collaboration for the benefit of the whole community and in part the world, right? That's really what we're doing. But we have to start somewhere, and that's right here.
That was Chris Yates talking about The Hive, a co-working space in Paonia. Next up in our series of new ideas is Transition Lab. Transition Lab is an educational alternative in Montrose. It's run by Russell Evans, a former high school teacher. Evans says he started the program to offer young people a way to pursue their passions while teaching them to be self-sufficient. KVNF's Laura Paul Massano talks to Evans about his project.
My name is Russell Evans, and I'm the director of a program called Transition Lab.
What is Transition Lab?
Transition Lab is an educational institution that I started in Montrose 4 years ago, and we basically teach 5 broad categories of skills. We teach our students how to grow all their own food. We teach them how to find affordable housing. We teach them how to create their own micro businesses. We teach them how to live in relationship with community. And finally, with the combination of all of those things, we hopefully give them a direction in their lives for the means to do what they love.
What inspired Transition Lab?
Transition Lab started when my wife and I wanted to be doing more in the community, but we couldn't because we were both working full-time jobs to pay for our house, our mortgage, and our debt. And we wanted to be doing things like growing more food locally. At the same time, we had a friend who was an organic farmer and chef, and he was lamenting the fact that he couldn't find a job being an organic farmer and an organic chef. And so we looked at each other and we said, look, we know you. We have a good relationship with you. We would really like to live with you. So how about you move in with us and you exchange those skills with us in our guest bedroom? And that way, what we can do is we can provide you with food, housing, and utilities, and you can provide us with an organic gardener and an organic chef. And the way that that broke down is we figured that rent in Montrose costs $500 a month. And so a good paying job, maybe $10 an hour. So we created this relationship where Evan would work for us for 50 hours a month and basically cook and garden for us. What was great about the whole relationship is that over 7 months, we had an organic gardener and chef living with us, which is a dream come true. And what was great for him is he actually got to do what he had dreamed of doing anyway. And since that only took, 10, 15 hours a week, he had plenty of time to get a job on the side. And since all of his basic needs were taken care of, he was able to use that money to exclusively pay off his debt. So it was a win-win situation where we got all of this benefit in the community, and he was able to get the economic freedom to do what he loved.
Transition Lab isn't free. Can you elaborate on the costs of the program and how a student who maybe has $24,000 in debt would afford the tuition of the program?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Transition Lab has two different programs. We have a program called the 7-month co-creator program, which basically runs the entire growing season. That tuition costs anywhere between $12,000 and $2,000. We also have a summer program that runs for $4,750. What I see the biggest difference between Transition Lab and like a traditional college is if you go to a college, if you're lucky, you can graduate virtually debt-free. Or if you do have debt, you can get a job that will allow you to pay off your debt fairly quickly. The thing that I've noticed in the last 10 years is that as the price of college has gone up exponentially, there's a lot of students graduating who have a lot of debt. And because they have so much debt, they aren't empowered to actually do what they want to be doing. They have to take jobs wherever they can find them to pay off just the interest on their debt. So we've had several students from Transition Lab who are in that exact situation where they've graduated, they've got debt, and they feel stuck because they don't get to do what they want to be doing. What Transition Lab has done is we've basically, through a combination of scholarships, them paying a little, and then doing gift economy tuition, we allow them to gain the skills necessary to meet all their basic needs without any money. And that's a game changer because when you think about your month-to-month expenses, the biggest chunk of any money that you bring in goes into paying for your food, your housing, and your utilities. Well, if we teach people how to meet all of those things, regardless of what's happening in the conventional economy, and just do it through relationship instead, then what happens is that gives them the economic freedom to do one of two things. Either they can be exchanging their skills for the rent and food, and then have an abundance of time the rest of the week, basically 40 hours, to get a job and to use all of that money to pay off their debt, or they have the economic freedom to explore what they really want to be doing, and that might be starting a new business.
Can you give me an example of a student going through the program and being able to afford the program and graduating without debt?
When students come to the program, there's no way that they can graduate without debt in the program itself because we're busy teaching all sorts of skills. But at the same time, I think the best example is Evan Lavin, the very first guy who lived with my wife and I, who, when he came in, had over $4,000 of credit card debt. And then when he left, all of that was paid off and he was finally on his feet. And he was able to move back to York, Pennsylvania, where he started a recycled steel furniture fabrication business, which was amazing. What we've had since then is 7 students go through the program, and they're all in different stages of meeting their basic needs through new conventional ways. So some of those students were able to pay cash And so they didn't have any debt from our program or debt from prior educational experiences. But those students have the skills and abilities now to be able to pursue whatever they want to be doing. Another good example is a student named Kevin Studley, who was in the program this last year. He had to actually borrow a couple $1,000s from his girlfriend to pay for tuition. And the other day I asked him, you know, are you going to be able to pay that back? And he said, you know, I haven't paid it back to her in cash, but I have paid it back in rent and food. That's a really interesting relationship because his girlfriend is working in the traditional economy. So she's got lots of income coming in. But Kevin is working in this relationship-based economy. And so he's got their collective needs taken care of. So overall, they're doing extremely well.
How long has Transition Lab been going, and what's been the growth of the organization since it started?
So Transition Lab started as just that experiment with Evan and I. That was 4 years ago. Then what I did is spent about a year writing a business plan and really making sure that all of my models were viable. And a lot of that involved just being in relationship with people like the farmers in the communities and saying, hey, is this going to work out? What are the things that we need to do to make this happen? Our very first year, Jake Hansen was our only student. But that very first year, we also won an award at MIT for being the most viable, replicable, and accessible model in a global contest for reducing CO2 emissions and in creating a grassroots movement to combat climate change. It was kind of funny when we got that award because I was like, you know, I just have one student. But we got to speak at MIT about that. As a result of that, this last year we had 5 students. And in 2015, we're shooting for 10. And one of my goals is for a percentage of the students to actually start replicating the program nationally in the next couple of years.
What does your operating budget look like? You are a nonprofit, correct?
We're kind of a nonprofit. Transition Lab is a for-profit, but we have a nonprofit scholarship arm. And that's just a business decision that we made. But our operating budgets, when we started in 2013, our entire operation budget was $8,000. And I came home in the black, $268, which I'm really proud of. This last year, operating budget was about $30,000. And I came home with about $6,000. But at this point, we're at this moment where all of our basic expenses are paid for. And so as I get more students, then I'm going to be able to honor myself with a better salary. One of the things we were talking about earlier, though, is that we've been doing a lot of gift economy tuition. And I actually had a great conversation with Charles Eisenstein about this, how 2 of our 5 students last year came to Transition Lab on the gift economy. And so even though I only made $6,000 last year, I also had a student who essentially paid her tuition by cooking for my wife and I 4 days a week. And what's funny about that is we all joke about how when we become a millionaire, we would love to have a massage therapist and a cook and a gardener. And I only made $6,000, but I had those things. So the wealth quality of my life has certainly increased. I definitely need to participate in the cash economy to pay some of my basic needs like my cell phone bill. But I think we're getting there and we're moving in the right direction.
That was KVNF's Laura Palmisano talking to Russell Evans of Transition Lab. Finally, we'll hear from another project from the same area, the Montrose Makerspace. Dr. Craig Hollenbaugh started the project that's still being developed. What do you see the need for new businesses in Montrose and the Western Slope?
Well, there's kind of 4 groups of people we want to kind of service at the Makerspace. The first one is the weekend craftsmen, where they have a table saw and a drill press in their garage, and they want to step up their skills. They want to learn how to weld, or they want to learn how to fabricate an aluminum or something like that. So that's a big group of people, because we have equipment there that they could never even consider buying. You know, our biggest machine is probably $70,000. So that's one group. The next group are the ties, the partnership we have with Welcome Home Montrose and the veteran component. Montrose is going to open the first fully adaptive water park in the country in June. And so the Makerspace is kind of committed to doing any type of fabrication for their needs to get onto the water. So if there's some type of adapter we need to hook onto the oar for the veterans or whatever that is, we can do that kind of rapid prototyping there, as well as job training and voc rehab there through the VA. We can do that there in the Makerspace. So that's another big component, is this veteran tie with Welcome Home Montrose. Then we have the all the K through 12 and the community college university kind of ties. There's a lot of makerspace activity in the K through 12. You know, libraries are allocating space for 3D printers and that type of thing. And so we have really kind of strong ties with the schools in town, as well as CMU, Colorado Mesa University, and Western Community College. And we're planning on teaching a few machining classes as well as electronic classes there at our makerspace for that. And then the last one is this component for this economic or this entrepreneur ecosystem, which is where a makerspace is hooked on to a co-space, which is hooked on to accelerator and microfinancing. So those four groups are what we're kind of servicing there in terms of where we think people are going to fit into it.
Can you give us some examples of what you could possibly, you know, make in a place like that?
One of the projects we're going to start working on is a track chair for disabled veterans, because we have an organization in town that's called Welcome Home Montrose, and they bring in disabled veterans to take advantage of all the outdoor activities. And so they have a lot of special needs for that. And so a track chair is an aluminum fabricated frame that has motor control and tracks instead of wheels. And so it's used for outdoor activities.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that's an example of something that we could fabricate there into Makerspace.
All right. And how did this Makerspace come about? What started it all off?
There's a machinist in town. His name is Ross Houck. And he wants to retire. And so he's been doing precision machining for the last 45 years. He's the Ross behind Ross Reels. And so he wants to keep all of his kind of equipment together and maybe work on a legacy project to leave Montrose with something. And so I was thinking about starting a makerspace, and he offered me the deal of really a lifetime is to basically rent out his machining facility and lease all of his machining equipment. So in one swoop, we get to lease about $700,000 worth of high precision machining equipment to start a makerspace. Most makerspaces start with a bunch of individuals get together and they put all their woodworking tools in, and then they pool some money together, and they might buy a 3D printer or they might buy a laser cutter, and they're grown from the ground up. We're starting from the other end. We're starting on the high end, and we're probably going to be the most equipped makerspace in the country from day one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have high hopes then for the makerspace with that kind of a start?
Oh yeah, it's going to draw a lot of people, a lot of companies and a lot of individuals to actually potentially move to Montrose because of the makerspace that's here and the facility that we have.
For people who may not know small businesses and small manufacturing, what kind of a boost would having a makerspace nearby be for a business?
So say I have an idea like a track chair and I want to fabricate it. So I would have to go to a machine shop and have them do something. Well, machine shops typically charge about $85 an hour for doing that type of custom work. And if you're an entrepreneur, you kind of need to go through a lot of iterative cycles to develop your prototype. And so you're looking at a machine cost just to fabricate a prototype of thousands and thousands of dollars. And that's typically kind of prohibitive for small individuals or small companies to actually consider doing that type of work. But in our makerspace, you can come in and if you have a little bit of skill, we can teach you how to use our equipment. And from there, you can fabricate your prototypes yourself. And the cost on our makerspace is the membership is going to be about $100 a month. If you have the time, which a lot of these individuals have, they can do all the fabrication they want. And so the cost savings on small businesses is quite enormous if they can do it themselves.
Yeah, it sounds like that would pretty quickly add up to a lot of savings. Do you have any idea when you're hoping to get going?
We'd like to We'd like to have a limited opening, which is partial tool access, you know, sometime in January, and then roll out new tools as the coursework for the training has been developed. Right now, our current membership, without really even trying, we have about 25 members. And we want to get that up to about 50 to really open. And so, but we haven't really done anything other than here is a makerspace. Do you want to be a member? And they say yes. It's almost immediate once they actually see all the equipment that we have.
Wow, that's great.
It is. It's awesome. The energy level over there is really very high. There's something else that I haven't talked about, and that's the importance of the lounge. So the makerspace itself, if you look at it from the outside, it's a room with a bunch of tools in it. But that's not it. There's a very large component, the social component to the makerspace. And the makerspaces around the country have figured out that the lounge is probably the most critical room in the facility. And all it has in there is a couch, and it might have a projector for computers. And that's where all the ideas actually get formulated. And so you'll have all these people come in with different skill sets and different experience levels sitting around chatting about projects and offering to cooperate on different aspects of somebody's idea.
How long have you been working on this project?
Since about the middle of September was when Ross made this offer to me.
Oh, wow. So this is still relatively recent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's rolling along like a steamroller, and everyone's getting excited about it potentially opening.
Do you look forward to working with so many entrepreneurs and people learning things and trying new things and testing things out?
If you watch some videos online about the makerspace, they talk about what happens on Friday and Saturday nights in the makerspace. They say it's the most energetic environment you could ever be in because people are there and they're really excited about what they're doing. And so it's not often that you get to be involved in setting up an environment where people can be really excited about what they're doing. And it doesn't matter what they end up working on. The energy level there is very high and it's very positive. And so everyone has problems at work. But when you go into a makerspace, I think that the level of energy that's there is significantly different than anything else. And that's what's going to make it really attractive for a lot of people to actually go there and use it. And so for me, that's an exciting thing to actually be part of, to create this environment.
That was Dr. Craig Hollenbaugh talking about the soon-to-be-open Montrose Makerspace. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Jake Ryan. Stay tuned for As the Worm Turns, coming up next.